All right, I'm here with Mark Schust. Mark, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure, I am a full stack developer, mainly have a background in PHP and e-commerce. I work a lot with Node and Git and Docker.
Sweet. That's been when was the switch from PHP to Node?
I still work primarily with PHP, actually.
Okay.
But I work on actually a side project that runs with Meteor, React, and Node. So some experience there.
That's an interesting stack.
Yeah.
So I just want to say first off that I absolutely love your 12-factor course that you're releasing, or that was released, I guess. And it's just like the perfect for me, for someone who's a front-end JavaScript developer and who's not very confident in the whole Docker. I use Git, just the basic commit push stuff. I don't follow really a lot of the guidelines, but just to have something really laid out for me, like here are the best principles, and then you go and show it. Like that just, anyway, thank you for making this.
Sure. Yeah, I've always been a big thumper of best practices. I think they really help streamline and guide you on how to do things. So.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, let's go ahead and talk about Git and Docker and kind of the 12-factor stuff. So it starts with a lot of Git information, like how to best practices around Git. So are there any, what sort of experiences do you have with Git around using the tools and shortcuts? And like, do you use just terminal-based stuff? Are you advocating Git flow to everyone you meet? You know what?
Yeah, I'm primarily use command line and terminal for everything around Git. There's a GUI out there called Source Tree, but I kind of always had problems with it. Yeah, I use Git flow. It's a branching model for Git, so it's basically a way of working on features and managing how that feature gets into the code base. And I actually came up with a simplified version of Git flow because there are a lot of complexities with managing the branches. It seems like you're always merging branches into another branch constantly. So,
okay, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually like, I should call it Git ship. And it's basically Git flow without the develop branch and without hotfix branches. And
so features are just based on master?
Yep. Features are based on master. And then you create release branches at the start of every development period. And then you're just really doing merges into those release branches. So it greatly simplifies things.
So have you seen devs struggle with the Git model, or have you seen Git flow kind of fix that for people?
A lot of the problems I see with developers working with Git is they don't have a specific way to manage their Git process. So you need a way to manage your code base and kind of guide your code through the whole process. So Git flow typically is typically used by everyone. It's kind of like the standard for a normal deployment process. So that does fix a lot of things. There's some complexity of merging branches and all of that. But other than that, it works quite well.
Yeah, I think if you just open the Git docs and you see the crazy amount of commands you have available, you're like, well, I don't even know where to start. And Git flow gives you that nice, well, first you're going to work on a feature. So let's make a feature branch, you know, then commit to that, then push, and then merge it back in. And then it's like, I think that's what people need to understand about Git is start here, do this, move it back over here, release it, test it. Like, and I think you explain that really well.
And there are really so many commands with Git. I typically use about four or five of those during normal working process. There's and there are some very helpful commands like git bisect and git blame, but typically you're using just commit, merge, push, you know, all the normal basic things. So yeah, I wouldn't get overwhelmed with all of the commands with Git.
Yeah, and compared to what SVN and CVS and the stuff I've used in the past and the catastrophic merge failures we used to have, like yes. Git seemed pretty stable and reliable.
Yeah, I got started with my repository tracking on SVN pretty much, and that was just a nightmare with a lot of folders being created with that SVN directory, and you know, the size of those repositories was huge. So
yep,
yeah, and always merge conflicts and things like that. But Git seems to solve all those.
Yeah, I think where people think, or JavaScript devs think now, we'll just, you know, RMRF the node modules directory. That you used to do that with your SVN directories. You're like, well, just blow it all away and check it out again, because that's the only solution that you could, you know, it's going to solve it. And Git's, I don't think I've done that with Git.
Yeah, I've done Git push-f quite a few times in the past.
Yeah.
But I guess there's always a situation where you're going to have to do that eventually. But for the most part, not, yeah.
Can you think of any good war stories around merges and releases with Git?
Not really. You know, I think the biggest faux pas I remember is trying to delete all of the folders in a certain directory. So I do like rm-rf.star.
Yeah.
So thinking that would delete all of the files and folders in that local directory, but what that actually does is wipe out your whole computer. So luckily I caught it before it erased everything and it had time to process all the files.
That's kind of a rite of passage, though. I mean, we've all...
Oh, yeah.
We've all been there.
Especially on a production server.
Yeah. If you haven't done it yet, just go do it tomorrow. Like, if you're listening and you haven't deleted everything off your computer or production, just go do it tomorrow and get it out of the way so you can experience it. It's kind of a... Just get through it. And yeah. Thank me later.
Yeah. Get it through when you're still a... junior or mid-level developer. So if you do a senior, you're done for.
Yep. How about, so 12 Factor also talks about dependencies, configuration, environment variables, all those sorts of things. Any good stories or advice around managing dependencies and environment variables and all that? I mean, it's that sort of seems to me like the, I know front-end development now, like the next step for me is I'm going to have to manage my app as it updates and getting it to a remote environment and all these things.
Hey, you know what? Docker actually makes all that very easy. So I remember working in the past, I went into a big dependency hell with Python and pip. It's known for having kind of dependency problems. And I was building actually a POS system at the time that used a Django backend with a package called TastyPy, and the front end was JavaScript MVC. Back in the day, I think it's called Dun.js now. And it was a combo of jQuery and JMVC. And I was trying to, I was trying to simulate instant reactivity with the REST API. So I was using stuff like, this was before Redux and everything, but I was using local storage and Firebase and WebSockets and all sorts of things. But,
Sure.
Yeah, I had a lot of dependency problems with that. This was before Docker was really released. But now if I had Docker, I'd just deploy a image and I wouldn't have to worry about anything. So really never ran into any issues with Docker or using it with NPM or Yarn.
All right. So on the topic of Docker, how would you explain Docker to a junior JS developer who's never heard of it? Like, what's the, you really need to start, like, this is important to your career.
Sure. I'd see it like a virtual machine, but without the memory and overhead and the large footprint of a VM. So, you know, you have your Docker daemon that runs locally on the host, but that just takes a whatever memory you set it at. Mm-hmm. And then you can run as many Docker images as you want at a time. So as opposed to a VM where you can only run really one or two VMs at a time, because they run usually, you know, 2 gigs or higher of RAM.
You're buying more RAM, literally purchasing more RAM so you can set up VMs like this.
So, I mean, comparable, the running unit of Docker is an image. So I'd see an image kind of like a VM, in that aspect. And then images are built from containers. So a container is really a skeleton blueprint of the operating system and a list of instructions built from what's called a Docker file. And those instructions build that image. It's like you're baking an image from those instructions.
Right.
So that's kind of, Docker file is kind of equivalent of a package JSON file. You're just defining everything you want to install and how to run it, just like npm run. It's pretty amazing that you can run Docker run dash IT Ubuntu bash, and then you're in the bash prompt in less than a second, as opposed to a VM where you actually have to boot it up and shut it down, and everything just works very quickly.
Yeah, I think the most magical experiences I've had with that were working on Windows and doing that, and then putting whatever Postgres or anything into Docker and just accessing it through ports on Windows. I'm like, wait a second. It almost felt like having a homebrew or whatever on Windows where I could just create these images, launch all these services, and just magically have them behind these ports. And
very, very similar. Yeah.
So how did you get started with Docker? What turned you onto it?
Actually, again, my background is like PHP and e-commerce. So I work naturally with a platform called Magento. It's kind of the standard in that field. A few years ago, and I believe it was summer 2015, Magento 2 was under heavy development and it was very hard to install. So I was working with Magento 1 at the time, which ran on PHP 5.
Okay.
And Magento 2 was built really for PHP 7. So I had that problem where I have a version mismatch and I can't easily switch versions on my machine and run both of them at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I was passively following Docker for a while and thought I'd give it a shot. So I kind of went underground for like a month and learned Docker. It was a bad month for me because
you bunkered up.
I have 1 year old twin girls at home and I work from home doing my own kind of consulting agency. And yeah, it was kind of hectic and I really needed Magento 2 to start running so I can kind of get a head start on everyone else. So yeah, I came out a month later and I had a working Docker image setup, and yeah, it's now the number one Docker setup for Magento 2 still a couple of years later, and I still maintain it. So, but yeah, without Docker, I would have had a really rough time there. There's people delayed, you know, a good 6 months because they couldn't even get it up and running. So yeah.
I love those brute force learning or whatever you want to call it, where you're like, well,
yeah,
this is not working. I have no other option.
Honey, it's learn by fire, you know, and that's, yeah, I think as we're programmers, you know, and I think the more experience you have programming, you kind of have to learn. Sometimes you just have to learn by fire and just plow through it. So,
yeah, there's something about those, and I don't, as much as I hate and don't recommend all nighters or writing code all night or anything, but every now and again, like there's times you just have to shove that information into your brain and have it all in there, no distractions, and just let your brain kind of tear it all apart until it makes sense.
Yeah, it seems like that happens to me every 2 years. Yeah. It's not a common thing for me at all. I'm a big proponent of work-life balance and everything, but there are times you just have to plow through and do it.
The whole, I'll throw out the word paradigm shift, even though that's one of those buzzwords, but you have to just change your way of thinking to a new way, and that just somehow requires like a baptism of fire or whatever you want to call it through those late nights. Mm-hmm. So how has, since your initial experience with Docker, have you seen it evolve and change, simplify or anything?
Yeah, so mainly it's just matured a lot around networking capabilities and volumes. So I'd say the volume improvements will affect local developer more than anything else. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not too much has changed. It's really just gotten better. File system's gotten quicker, more of native speed on Linux for Mac and Windows.
Yep.
And a lot of additional support for Mac and Windows because it runs kind of natively on Linux. But you need that daemon on Mac and Windows to connect it all.
I remember my initial struggles with it on Windows, but I think Microsoft kind of put some backing behind it and reworked Windows a bit to support it better.
Oh, it's been great since the beta Docker for Mac, I believe the beta release. It's been fantastic.
Yeah,
versus what it was before. So.
Yeah, there's so much support behind it, so much momentum, and yeah, it's lovely seeing people work together that way.
Mm-hmm.
So deploying an app with Docker, how do you go about that compared to just having say a Node index.js file?
Sure. So there's another software package that Docker creates called Compose, mm-hmm. and it allows you to run multiple containers at once very easily. So you basically set your config in a YAML file, and then you do Docker Compose commands like Docker Compose run and up and things like that. And your environment is set from an .env file typically. So you can use Compose to deploy containers. More popular option, especially lately, has been Kubernetes. So Kubernetes is a platform that was developed inside of Google. It was originally named Borg, and it ran all of their internal infrastructure. So that's kind of where Kubernetes was and really Docker was born from. So yeah, there's a lot of complexities around Kubernetes and clusters and nodes, and it is complex to run, and there's a lot of additional terminology you have to run, you have to learn on top of Docker. So I'd say a more basic version of deploying your software is Docker Swarm. It's greatly matured in the last year, and it's really just like Docker Compose with just a few changes. So if you can run Docker Compose, you can most likely run Swarm and deploy your whole fleet of containers out there.
I think they're on the Docker website. Swarm and Kubernetes are side by side, and if you want to learn one or the other, they'll kind of guide you through it.
Yeah, Docker actually just built in the official support for Kubernetes. I don't think they really promoted it. They're promoting their Swarm package instead. But Kubernetes has been just very, very popular. So
yeah, that's cool. That's from Google, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're, I think on Google hosting, they're always pushing the Kubernetes options.
Yep, because you have to run at least three compute instances typically to run it. So
okay.
Google Cloud has a fantastic cloud service to let you set up and manage your whole Kubernetes cluster if you're looking into where to host it. That's a great option.
Have you used Google Cloud much or other services?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I typically run everything on Google Cloud lately. When I started using it, it was very basic and it didn't do a lot of things that AWS did. That's completely changed. It's a great platform to run on. It's very cheap.
They have a CLI now, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have a gcloud command that you can deploy your whole Kubernetes fleet with command line from your local environment. So it's awesome.
Yeah, My history with Google Cloud hosting and services and everything have been just terrible UIs through their websites. And as soon as they released, I think Firebase did a similar thing where they released a CLI. I'm like, finally, just give me a simple command and a couple flags. I mean, compared to some of the UIs they try and build around these commands and flags, just boggle my mind.
Yeah, Google Cloud got tremendously better once they redid everything on material design.
Okay.
That I think it happened a couple of years ago, but it's matured and I think it's actually easier than AWS right now.
All right. So any other recommended tools for Docker or any?
Not too much. I typically still run everything from command line. If you wanted a GUI aspect, there's something called Portainer. So you can run that locally or in production or both. So it pretty much overlays a GUI for your a whole overview of your app, what containers are running, what images are persisting, and everything. And I'd say probably a more basic version is a another package called Kitematic.
Isn't that Docker's in-house solution? Or?
Yeah, I believe so. Work with SVN. So if you remember like Tortoise SVN, where they put check marks on the files and folders. So I kind of see Kitematic kind of like that.
Okay.
Where it's very basic and very simple. It doesn't allow you to do a whole thing or a whole lot, but for a starter, if you're just getting started and looking for something really basic, check out Kitematic. It's Mac and Windows.
Okay. Yeah, my experience with Kitematic has been after installing it, you see all these images and all these wonderful options, and then you pick something to install and it looks like it's working, and then you go and try it and you can't figure it out past that. Like it's just full of potential and excitement, and then it shows that it's running and you're like, well, I can't get to that port. Or like there's this.
Yeah, you still have the overhead. Like you should still, it doesn't prevent you from learning Docker. It's kind of like just a very lightweight gateway into Docker. But yeah, once you're doing anything customizable at all, it's not useful.
It seems like it's the idea is there, the execution's off, and I'm sure they'll improve
it. If they make it better, it'd be great, because it's there is some overhead with Docker. I don't think it's too bad, but it's kind of like you said, a paradigm shift of how you think.
Do you see people making big mistakes with Docker? Common mistakes?
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing I see is people trying to squash everything in one image, in one container.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, you take your monolithic app, and it might be okay to do that, just getting in started. And if you wanted to kind of start getting into Docker and didn't want a full setup, or if you had a really hard time managing all your dependencies and installing everything, it might be a good option. But typically, you want to run things like a microservice architecture where you have one service per one container. And that's kind of utilizing the true nature of Docker, so you can scale services independently of each other.
Yeah, I think if you don't know Docker Compose, like you wouldn't think that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you wouldn't think I should launch all of these, because you're thinking I just need to shove everything into one and then I'll deploy that one.
Yeah, and you can, but you when you're doing that, you don't have too much more benefit over running something like a VM on production. If you build everything service oriented, you can deploy and scale those services independently of one another.
So to clarify for people listening, can you give an example of services all contain, like an example of what they do in Docker Compose? Separate out.
So like let's say you have a Nginx load balancer. That can potentially be a service. Mm-hmm. And then you have, let's say you have one node app under it. So that's another service. So typically front end load balancers like Nginx, they don't require a whole lot of computing power. You know, one load balancer might be able to manage, 100 times of the requests of that one load balancer on the app side. So, but let's say your node app is utilizing a lot of memory or CPU, you can actually deploy many, many node apps behind that load balancer.
Yeah.
And configure Nginx to look at those node apps. So you can scale your node app independently of Nginx. So that's probably a pretty basic example.
Well, no, it sounds fairly complicated when you say it like that. But I highly recommend watching Mark's course, because like he shows just how simple that can be with a couple flags and a number, how many you want.
That's a problem I have, sometimes with write-ups online that you find it looks so confusing. There's so many steps, but to set up an Nginx proxy, to proxy request a node, it's actually like two or three lines. it's not too complex. So a lot of it's probably just copy and paste from Stack Overflow and everything, which can't blame them, but.
I've personally never set up anything in Docker without having some sort of reference or other example project open, because I just don't want to get it wrong. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yep. Like there's no.
Yep. And the same thing with like Nginx configs. I don't know how many configs I see with all these values changed, and I come across another blog post with those same values, and then actually look into the Nginx documentation and find out, what do these do? Like, why are these here? So that's, I'm always questioning why things are done, and rather than just blindly, you know, copying things. But sometimes you have to just to get started. But it's a good idea to really digest and dig everything, especially with Docker. You know, you might find another image out there that does what you need it to do, but it might be completely overblown with, you know, you might be able to do the same thing with one or two lines yourself.
Yeah, I have a friend who, if he answers something on Stack Overflow or puts it on GitHub, and it's a there's configuration in there, he'll add in some nonsensical configuration option in there that has nothing, that won't affect anything, it has nothing to do with it, just to see if people copy and paste and leave that in. And you can Google that and see how many people are using it.
Oh, that's great.
A way of tracking it. So,
yeah. The number one thing I see also is people copying like commands, but they're setting the default value. So there's no reason to set it because it's already set by the default. So that's like, I see that 90% of places.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But yeah, no judgment here.
Yeah. I do that too sometimes. So it's, get her done.
So the 12-factor apps in general, have you seen a large adoption from the community, like once this got written up as kind of guidelines?
Initially it had, you know, a great feedback everywhere. But it's around the same time that microservices were getting a lot of great press.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, you know, you have two sides of the field here where some people were against microservices and some for. So I think Docker naturally aligns with the microservice side because of it's a service oriented architecture, and it just plays right into that.
Yeah.
So I think if you like microservices, you're probably going to like Docker and the 12-factor concepts. So yeah, there's kind of a split way of thinking. I'm more on the service oriented architecture side, where it, you know, you just have the ability to scale everything independently. So if you have a large app, I don't see why you wouldn't move to it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Even reuse some of those services for
mm-hmm.
future things.
Yeah, and you can run, what's great about Docker is you can use even different programming languages for different sections of your app. So
yeah.
You think of, you know, I can run something in Go and expose a API endpoint and deploy it with Docker, and my Node app doesn't have anything to do with Go. And so it's really great if you have teams that are multi-versed in different programming languages.
Yeah, or Go is the right solution for...
Correct, yeah. You have different problems and you have different ways of solving them, maybe better than using Node for everything.
Right on. Do you think anything's missing from the 12-factor principles?
I don't think so. I don't think I'm I'm that much on the DevOps to realize that there's something missing there. I think the guidelines are pretty.
I would never have never have the guts to write something like that. The Ten Commandments of development or anything like.
Whoever wrote 12 Factors knew what they were doing.
I missed their name. I just read their name when I looked at it this morning, but. Thank you to person who wrote 12 Factor. It's an incredible guide for people of my level. And
absolutely. And it's, you know, it's something too, you can pull in three or four of these concepts and start applying them rather than switching everything at once. So you can kind of start digesting the microservice, you know, and service oriented kind of line of thought around that.
Well, all right. Any closing words of wisdom you'd like to share with everyone?
No, just go forth and Dockerize.
I don't.
It's you know, it's really great for a lot of applications, so highly recommend it.
Sweet. Thanks a lot, Mark.
All right, thanks, John.